Thank Chairperson and good day to the honourable members and their colleagues from the SOCs and the DG, and I recognise the Minister of Absentia. The delegation from CETA Chairperson is myself, the Chief Executive Officer of Freeman Lombardo. I'm Pandera Nguyai, the Chief Technology Officer.
And Tanya Abraham, the Stakeholder Relations.
Thanks, Chair. We unfortunately, our oversight had some challenges coming down today, so we will represent. I will try and go through this presentation as quickly as possible. Some of the issues would have been covered by the colleagues in the other presentation, especially the presentation from CTPS, which talked about the Safe Connect. So I will not repeat the issues that he talked about in terms of the SA Connect policy, except to say that CETA plays a role in the space of the digital connected government in ensuring that we aggregate the government demand and to also ensure that the prioritized services are serviced properly, and also the content development in the context of e-government and with the potential of helping SMEs participate in this space more effectively. Our roadmap covers a number of things, and the things that I will deal with are the infrastructure and e-government. And on the infrastructure, essentially, we have been upgrading our facilities, or busy upgrading our facilities. We have negotiated interim disaster recovery sites so that we respond to some of the services that have been provided already, and we're doing that work with Home Affairs in particular. We are upgrading our network, and I'll talk to that later. We've got some agreements with Broadband Infraco as well as Telcom. We're also looking at interacting with other network providers in the country so that we can have full coverage. And we are putting a plan to build a new data center. We'll put a blueprint for that. And in order to deal with some of the immediate needs, we are also working towards creating some virtualization with the support of GS3 facilities in the background. On the e-government space, we targeted that we will do 6 services this year, but we focused on building the platform, which has been done. We demonstrated that at GovTech is working quite well, and we'll be scaling up into the future. And as the work that the department is driving in terms of coordinating the provision of e-government, will then be able to, in fact, exceed some of these targets as we move into the 2016-2017 financial year. In terms of the program that we've been engaging in at CETA, we've got 4 work streams. One is the governance work stream, which we've done most of the work, which is meant to make sure that there's governance mechanism, there's a way in which we interact with the stakeholders and make decisions and drive this work. There's a policy work stream, which ensures that we make sure that the policy and service framework to enable our e-government is in place, in as far as we're concerned. We also have got the infrastructure work stream, which talks to the infrastructure issues that are needed, both the network and connectivity, as well as the hosting facilities and data centers. Then we've got most of our work, which is in the e-government space, which talks about the platform, and I will talk into this in detail. On the governance, the project management office has been established, steering committee is functioning, the interdepartmental committee we submitted that to the department in terms of who we think should participate, and the department is going to be leading, the TPS is going to be leading us in this space. We do have the support of the minister. He has spoken many times about the government. He participated in GovTech in the workshop that we had, where we beginning to think about what it means and what are the best practices and so on. He stayed throughout that participation as a demonstration of support. So we're quite pleased with that. We do think that perhaps in order to facilitate quicker implementation and budgeting, by the way, for the e-government, the minister may have to drive a project where we get other ministers to participate, but that's work that we in the formulation stage. On the policy fund, the roles have been really trying to define them, especially with the change of departments and shifting of functions from DPSA to TPS. There are still things that DPSA would deal with and things that TPS would deal from a policy point of view that are busy being clarified to the DGs leading that work. I know that she has met the other DGs in discussing these issues. The issue of the funding for e-government services is important, and discussions again, I think Dinyiko talked about this in relation to the funding models that are being discussed with the Treasury. And to make sure that the budgeting for the MTF is in fact taken into account these, so that the work that is being done can be translated into action easily and being funded appropriately as well. On the infrastructure front, we have completed the blueprint for what we think the data center for CETA, and that's what the country should look like. We have made arrangements with Telkom to deal with certain immediate needs for specific services, critical services, especially dealing with home affairs, and the project that I'm seeking is already started. We think that in 4 to 5 weeks' time, that project will have been concluded and will have delivered stability on the services for home affairs and create a learning space there to understand what we need to do to stabilize the rest of the services that we'll be delivering. I will talk about the network issues when I talk about the broadband in a later slide. On the e-government program progress, platform has been done. We demonstrated it at GovTech. We are busy putting that very same prototype inside CEDA so that government departments or the committee, when the time is available, they can actually see and view what we're talking about when we're talking about us being ready to deliver in the state. And they can see some of the processes that are being run there already. The forms platform is being extended to integrate the back-end systems so that when you get to the transformation part of the e-government services, it should work well. There's work to make sure that the payment module is developed and so that we can create also we create the portal for ensuring that people are able to link through the government through one particular point in order to access these services. The software for integration, for the messaging platform that will also serve as a supporting tool for the e-government services, which is an essential part, is underway. We're having discussions with the Department of Human Settlement and the Department of Labor. They've approached us to try and automate some of the services, so the work that we're doing there. In order to enable better integration, currently most of the integration that in the services that are being run is vertical integration, and you need to be able for some of the services here for horizontal integration and enable governments to derive benefits from the e-government space. We are in the process of appointing, I see that my team wrote and concluded, we're in the process of appointing the integration experts. There's a few steps that we still need to go through in order to finalize those appointments. They are not yet finalized. I apologize for the statement that says they're concluded. We have completed the architectural horizontal integration architecture that's going to help us with that horizontal integration, and we're going to be trying in the next few months to see how some of the services that are cut across can be linked to that platform. We plan to implement that. The plan is in place to implement, and the security team is finalizing the planning for digital signatures and other measures to make sure that there's security when people begin to access services of government through the through these platforms. So hard work has also begun. We have looked at the work that we're doing, and the committee may know that Korea at some stage was ranked as number one in the world in this area of e-government. We have looked at the work that we're doing, compared that to the South Koreans. We had a speaker in Korea coming from Korea, but we sat down with the speaker after the conference, took them through our platform, took them through the work that we're doing, compared line by line, a number of things that we're doing versus what they are doing. They were actually very, very impressed that everything that we do, in fact, is in line with what they have done on their side to make sure that it's successful. So we are very, very encouraged by the fact that at least our platform that we're using complies with international practice as well. And it has worked somewhere. A chance of it working in South Africa is also great. But we do have some challenges that we need to get over. The issue of funding and the DG talked about it in the context of the implementation of the SA Connect. In the early stages, the funding on e-government services will be an issue, but as you implement some of these, you will raise funds as you derive efficiencies. You will raise funds. So we're looking at all of those possibilities when interacting with government partners. In the past, departments tell us that, no, but we don't have the money. So we're beginning to say to them, if you've got in your budget for a particular service, let's see how we can work together to make sure that that service is automated and derive savings from that, that you can use those funds elsewhere. The government structures that cover all of a number of government departments is necessary, especially when it comes to areas where information sitting in one department may be necessary for the services that are delivered by another department. So that governance process is necessary. Like I said earlier, the DG of TGS, Ms. Segese, is driving that the creation of that governance structure. The policy of strategy that indicate the priority areas for services, I think this was an issue. It's actually becoming much clearer now. With the items that have been selected in terms of the NGP. The capacitation of e-government program, we need to build that capacity better, but we are addressing just CETA. We are putting together mechanism to get external support so that we make sure that we roll out quickly, but also we want to leverage on the existing capacities in some of the departments that have implemented some of their services already. In terms of the broadband program, we obviously work with Telkom, with PBI, we've got long-term contracts with them already. We're having discussions with MTN, Vodacom, Neotel, so that we can increase our capacity in that space and increase our options and be in a better position to optimize the existing infrastructure in the country. We are reviewing the network strategy that we have so that we are able to take advantage of the existing infrastructure, but at the same time, align it with the government requirements, then we are able to focus in the areas where the need is needed the most. Like I said, the contracts with Telkom are in place. The Western Cape project is underway. The discussions with the Gauteng province have started. We are expecting them to give us a letter any time now that will ensure that we have a commitment on that space, but the discussion has been positive and encouraging. We are creating more capacity on our wide area network to make sure that we are able to respond to all the needs and create sufficient redundancy for the services to continue to be available. The transactional issues on the contract to Telkom, we've got some of the teething problems there that we are trying to resolve, and we have met several times, and a plan has been put in place to deal with those. We are analyzing the priorities with the BBI, and I'm sure the CEO will mention some of those issues when she presents. We're finalizing the priorities so that we align those priorities with government priorities as well. And in the Western Cape project, there's some equipment that is outstanding, but once that equipment is received, we are going to be underway. And once all of the orders also have been received. So in conclusion, we continue to work with DPS and DPSA and trying to make sure that we work with other government departments. We continue to look for options in terms of the transfer of funding for e-government services and see how we can find efficiencies through delivering the services as well as therefore releasing funds to be available for other activities and the better rollout of the e-government strategy. And we think that our approach is aligned to industry best practice and industry best practice, and we therefore believe it stands a very good chance of being successful. Thank you.
Thank you for the summary, giving us time and not repeating what the presenters have alluded to already. And now coming to centers and broadband in trouble.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members. I will begin by apologizing for the absence of the accounting authority, but I think all is in order. My colleagues can introduce themselves. I'm Philem Kwele, the Chief Executive Officer of Broadband Infraco.
Good morning. Chairperson and the members of parliament. My name is Tandi Sama. I'm the acting CFO of EBI.
Honorable Chairperson and honorable members, I greet you all. I'm the executive in charge of legal and regulatory at Broadband Infraco. Sorry, my name is Klaus Makawa.
Thanks, colleagues. I think from our side, our presentation will also be very short and to the point. Firstly, we'd like to see how our mandate, which is to ensure that we avail broadband access and availability, is directly aligned to the NDP priority of establishing national, regional, and municipal fiber optic networks. The vision, again, our mandate is directly aligned to vision and SA Connect. From our side, our interpretation of SA Connect, we do believe that progress has been made, as CDG has indicated earlier. It does become important for us to have clarity of what an open access network is. That definition is very critical because while ICASA has indicated facilities regulation, there's still a tendency by operators to indicate that some assets are strategic in nature and people cannot access them. We also conducted a study about broadband impact on the society and on the GDP. That information has been shared with the department and is being studied, and I do hope that because of the countrywide study, it would be taken over by the department. From a detailed development point of view, as indicated by the CETA CEO, we are working very closely with them. And I think as CEOs of SOCs between ourselves, USASA and CETA, we would like to consolidate and share with the department how we engage with provinces rather than each one of us going to the provinces individually, but collectively ensure that we go to the provinces and avoid duplication of efforts, but also clarity on what our roles are, as was indicated earlier by the CEO of SASA. From a collaboration point of view, as we do use the services of electricity and rail, we do have agreements with Eskom and Transnet, and in concluding stages with PRASA, we've agreed a methodology on how we would use their network on a use-by-pay basis. From the provincial government, as I indicated, we do have agreements with Limpopo. We applied for a grant with Limpopo and Mpumalanga. The West Africa Cable System is a consortium model as well, where different parties, public and private, came together. Would you believe that that can also be utilized? Our relationship with Dark Fiber Africa at this stage is commercial in nature, but again, leveraging on the facilities using regulation. We would like from our side to get other models of deploying infrastructure rather than just PC. We need to look at a core investment in infrastructure, swapping infrastructure. From a digital opportunity point of view, being a 7-8-year-old company, our average age is less than 34. 70% of our employees are technically in nature. So we do think we've invested a lot of money in ensuring that we do have the right skills in the country.
Thank you. Slide 3 just outlines a brief synopsis of the regulatory environment in which Port Infraco operates. In 2008, the company applied for an electronic communication network service license as well as an electronic communication service license. In October of 2009, it was issued with an electronic communication network services license, or an ECNS, but not the ECS license. Notwithstanding the absence of the ECS license, the company explored other options of acquiring that license in order to fulfill the remaining aspects of its mandate, and it therefore explored the possibility of acquiring that last ECS license. But given the restrictions contained in the ECA, which is the Electronic Communication Act, the initial restriction being that because Infraco is a state-owned company in which the government has got more than 85% shareholding, it could not apply for that license. That restriction has fallen away in terms of the ECA Amendment Act. However, simultaneously with the removal of the restriction, another restriction came into being, being that the scope of class ECS licenses are now regionally or district-based as compared to nationally, and that was the position previously. The ICT policy review process was initiated in April of 2012, and that was followed by the establishment of the ICT policy review panel. The company has been engaging with the Department of Communications, which is now the Department of Telecoms and Postal Services, to gain membership of the panel. And as early as, or as late as, or as recent as this month, we have forwarded correspondence with the department to revive this topic of the membership of the panel. But notwithstanding the fact that we are not currently a member of the panel, we have continued to participate in some of the activities of the panel through some of the subcommittees, and in this case, the Infrastructure and Services Subcommittee, which is looking at the policy options, the learning, for example, the role of the SOCs, as well as the ICT market structure. The members and the Honorable Chairperson have heard about the collaboration between Robin Infraco and SASA, And we have heard that USAPA have invited the operators to submit applications to roll out infrastructure in underserved areas. Providing FRACO is also responding to the invitation. Thank you.
Being new to the department, we felt it prudent to take the department back. We had been given 1.8 billion rand. It obviously came through in tranches, and this slide considered up to 2012, because 2012 is the period when InfraCo took over the control of its maintenance of its network fully. That's why there is the specific break. And with that, assets were acquired from Eskom and Transnet. Money was invested in the West Africa cable system. Universal service obligations were also implemented, aligned with a new growth path, and the NDP connectivity with our immediate SADC neighbors, with Botswana having been outstanding and expanding access. We should say during that period we did provide for infrastructure that I call infrastructure, albeit to Neotel, who were then the direct liaison, who had the direct liaison with ITA. I think over that period there has been an increase, steady increase in customer, considering that we were licensed in 2009. Our revenue dropped when Neotel reduced its number of services, but so did our cost of sales because we had direct relation with the customers. So I think from where we are sitting, we took over during that period before 2012. The network was not necessarily optimally maintained. So when we took over, we had to ensure that we addressed the burden of the infrastructure. From a mandate point of view, that requires us to expand access. Yes, we have not necessarily increased the kilometers, but we have significantly improved the quality of the network. We have increased the number of our open access points and ensured that other operators are able to connect to our network, which is why we now do have South Sea on our network. We have steadily over the year ensured that all of SADC is connected. And now we are engaging with our neighboring partners to ensure that we can at least ensure that there's redundancy and create rooms. From an international access point of view, we are still a tier one investor in WEC. There is an upgrade that is coming up and we intend to go ahead with that because the DFP has indicated that they want to have the increased capacity. Operationally, we are addressing our enterprise resource planning system and ensuring that our network is fully secured. So we very much in line with what our mandate requires, what SA Connect requires, and the expectations from the NDP. From policy targets point of view, for people to have broadband access, user experience, of 5 megabits per second by 2016, with increased capacity on our network in various provinces, and we continue to do so. And we did have a challenge, again, with where the facilities regulation could not necessarily come into effect, where operators indicate that their assets are strategic in nature, implying that we do need to build our own open access points. But those have been addressed now. And we have renewed 40%. We had an 80% burden of obsolete transmission equipment, and that has now been upgraded. Our, from an enterprise development point of view, this is very much an industry that is driven by OEM and very few OEMs and very few providers. And our enterprise development strategy focuses very much on ensuring that there is participation of previously disadvantaged people within this emphasis on women. We've conducted roadshows across three provinces. The outcome of those roadshows was indicated the lack of understanding of what is required, and our approach has now been very much on creating awareness and educating and finding those that are already in the industry to shadow new people. But most importantly, implementation of the NIP, the National Industrial Participation Program, of ensuring that where we spend over $10 million, 10% of that is spent in the country, be it skills development, especially for our employees, or ensuring that SMEs are being utilized in their deployment. We put a lot of emphasis on ensuring that we go out to various provinces and expose our young technicians and engineers in the provinces to learn so that they can have an appetite to get into the specific industry. I think those efforts for us are very important. Currently, we do have 10 interns across the company, and at the end of the program, we will definitely ensure that over 50% of them are absorbed, because as we train our engineers, we also lose them to the rest of the industry. So the lifespan with us is quite limited. Financial sustainability has been quite critical for us. So we use commercial projects to ensure that we deliver on the company. We have restrictions in terms of we are expected to have a 100 million cash reserve, so we are going, so we ensure that we are going concern company. That takes up 60% of our contract is ensuring that financial sustainability is there. So all of our network improvement projects are at the back of fundable business cases. Of course, we have a challenge that we have a weak balance sheet. The commercial banks are looking at us and saying you do not have a history of debt. Since we've moved a month and a few weeks into the department, we are appreciative of the support that we have been provided by the department and the ministry. Yesterday only we received a letter of support from the minister because we do need a guarantee for 170 million rand, and that is at the back of money owed to us by the Department of Science and Technology. So that should facilitate a process for us to be able to ensure that we are liquid in the short term. But we have the intention of requesting more funding going forward. From an economic transformation point of view, I've already talked in detail about that, but this is just a summary of the programs that we are driving within the organization, rolling out network in a way that is fundable and ensuring that the company is sustainable, but at the same time ensuring that we deliver on the policy of economic transformation. So our projects, as the CETA CEO has indicated, cover all provinces for both CETA and CELSI. But more critically for the company, they provide us with autonomy from the second network operator. So with these projects, we are able to ensure that we pull out of neutral points of presence, which are exorbitant prices are being charged, and create our own open access ports where such parties can be connected. As indicated already, our challenge is funding, more critically, considering that in the first 5 years of the company, the network was not managed by the company and it wasn't maintained. So when we took it over in 2012, we have ensured that we focus on the maintenance of that network. I've already talked about the support from the department for the short-term liquidity purposes. We are engaging the DBSA in that regard. We were provided a grant by the Africa Development Bank as far as due diligence has been conducted, and I think we've stabilized the organization and we're happy where we are at. Attracting critical and core skills is a challenge as well, which is why our focus is on ensuring that we attract those that are coming straight out of university and train them. So we'd like to expand that program because when people want to move on, necessarily we cannot keep them. The other challenge for us is the role of non-ICT SOCs that have ICT assets, your ESCOM, your Transnet, and your SANRAL, because, again, duplication from our side and them in terms of what is the role that they would be playing, and coordination of provincial, district, metro, and municipality broadband rollout, because we do believe that, as the DCG indicated earlier, it is important to connect a community. As you connect the community, then you connect the health and those other facilities. Thank you.
Thank you, Sue. Can you come to Senkes now?
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. My name is Thabo Mnake, the chairperson of the Centec Board and our delegation as follows.
Good morning, Chairperson and members of Ministry of Health.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. My name is Frankie Mata, I'm the CEO of Centec.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. My name is Maunde Nileni. I'm responsible for calendar patients and parliamentary affairs. Thank you.
Can I just ask you? I was just wondering why Centec is moving so far down the line. It's very difficult. If all the presenters will be presenting, we can't see them behind the machine. It was the same with the previous presentation. I was just wondering, is it difficult to just move a little this way? We would like to engage their faces. Thank you.
I thought it is important to just make this one fundamental point. In the entire ecosystem, our role is as follows. We specialize on satellite connectivity. And as a result of this critical role, whenever there is no terrestrial coverage, we come in and participate as a gap filler through our satellite abilities. We will actually demonstrate this point more in detail during the presentation. And without further ado, I would like to hand over to the CEO to take us through the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Members. Our presentation is just slightly different. It's specifically deals with what we have been doing over the last year, especially on the on the research services. The presentation will be on the screen just now.
Thank you.
Chairperson has mentioned, and I think just to also to interested for the comment from the Honourable Chairperson about the previous attempts participation about that. In fact, it is indeed true that CERTEC, starting from around 2002, launched the first award of data to the social data service in the country for general consumers. That was the now wireless product. And it is common cause that that service went through a great amount of difficulty, such that by 2009 it was a highly loss-making operation. In around the same time, 2007, then the National Treasury gave them about 500 million rand as funds to further expand their operation. That was subject to the company getting approval from the Minister of Finance on the revised business plan. And over the years, that really never happened. As a result, the Minister of Treasury then called for the money to come back. The result was that we also had some broadband spectrum in the 2.6 gigahertz range. And the board, after quite a lot of deliberations, looking at the physical possibility of actually rolling out the network, looking at the cost of obtaining the spectrum, particularly on this part, the fact that it was probably not likely that we'd be able to roll out the network in the short term, given the challenges that we're having with the approval of business plans. And then looking at the cost of the spectrum, which was around 40 million per planet. The decision was then that the spectrum be returned to CASA, the money had already been recovered, and that the company would then respond differently to its participation in broadband as at the right time. Just a reflection on that, if we had not taken that decision, we would have about by now 120 million rand would have left the company out of the income statement without any wealth being created, because we still not have been able to provide to grant any kind of network. And that money 120 million rand would have come out of our basic operations and would have impacted our core functions around broadband signal distribution services. So we remain committed to, I think, whatever mandate we are given in respect of the implementation of the SEConnect program. But as we stand right now, as we'll be presenting here, we do still operate a VSAT network, and that allows us to at least provide some form of connectivity to those areas that are currently covered by terrestrial networks. And as a result, the VSAT network is serving as a gap filler, as the chairperson has mentioned. Just before the CEO goes into the details of the presentation, we'd just like to also announce that our new corporate plan that is coming up, we will unveil at least a different way of participation, of using broadband services, at a minimum to enhance basic broadcasting services. And that will be aligned again with the two pillars of the Broadband Connect, that is the digital opportunity on one hand, and the digital future, particularly around the integration of services. That's a very rich area. That is aligned again directly, more directly with our mind around broadcasting. So the rest of the presentation will really be now about what we are doing and have been doing around VSAT as a component of the overall network that is required to provide universal access to broadband services. Thank you.
Thank you very much, you. Honorable Chairperson and honorable members, we made a presentation in September in this house on these matters, and then we were asked to go in and provide more details. For example, you see under USASA, we had indicated almost some salary of 62 cents that we're providing for, and then we have to go and provide the actual school, the province where, because the actual center where the province where the center is, the district where the center is, the municipality as well as the town, because the honorable house wanted to certify itself with the impact that they were making, because we are focusing mainly on the outskirts areas of the country. So for Unisasa, we were providing end-to-end connectivity. We also provide ongoing support to the centers. So when there are challenges with the centers, they call us to go and address to the challenges that they address and that they are experiencing. We were using a technology called KU lens currently, but we're busy exploring KA band mainly to address the speed that our customers have been having challenges with. We're also then addressing the availability. So the next few slides are just basically indicating where the centers are. You will see the slides talking, we've got 6 in Eastern Cape, 8 in Mpumalanga, 3 in Northern Cape, and Gauteng, 4 West, Northwest, 3 Western Cape, 6 in Free State, 3 in Limpopo, and 9 in KZN. Yeah, so these are just basically the details so that members can be able to satisfy themselves about our basic effectiveness of the centers. On slide number 7, Monday, you can go to the slide number 7. There you'll see the summary of the schools that are connecting. We are paying the E-rate that Ikasa has spoken about when we connect to the schools. The E-rate covers the connectivity and then also covers the recruitment charges that are incurred by the schools. The impact here on the schools is positive. We've done a research. We've interviewed parents who are closer to the schools. Some of the parents, they go to the schools to go and learn how a computer operates, and then also do a little bit of connectivity as well. The attendance at these schools has improved since we've converted the schools. Learners come to school very early. Instead of coming at 8 o'clock, they come, some of them come at 7 o'clock. And then they leave late as well. So the impact, you can see the impact of the intervention is really helpful to the disadvantaged learners that we have. The slides following that are also giving the details of where the schools are, the town, and so on. Slide number 18 talks about our CSI project called the ILAB. The project was started in the financial year 2011-2012, and we've connected 36 schools since the inception. You'll see there how they only connected one school and were the next 2 schools. It's mainly because those provinces have their own plans regarding the broadband. So we're not focused on the. We're working with the department and the shareholder to identify, according to the needs, working together with the Department of Education to identify the needy places. Yeah, so what we provide, we provide in the. When we sponsor the lab, we provide the computers, we provide security, we check the classroom, how it is, and the link that is fatherproof, we will provide the fatherproof. And then we will be providing the free internet support for 5 years. And then after the 5 years, then the school law takes over the cost of the internet connectivity. We also give the schools an option of tablets. Instead of providing desktops or laptops, the schools have got an opportunity to choose a tablet because I think that's the way the world is going. Yeah, so the next slide also is talking about the actual locality of the schools that were connected. There was a question also when we were here in September regarding what do we do with the teachers and the center managers? Do you just go and drop the labs and leave them? So what do we do train the people responsible for the labs to make sure that they know how to switch on and switch off, how to connect, if there are challenges, who they call, and so on. And then there was also then a question about the schools that were connected in Mpumalanga. The honorable members raised an issue about the equipment that is still left, that was left at the schools. So just to give a bit of background, in 2007, a company called 42 Technologies, which is a reseller, approached Centec, and in connection in working with the Mpumalanga Department of Education. And then we signed a contract with them and the department to install these sets over a total of 5 years. And then we had, by the end of 2009, we had collected 609 schools. But then what happened, there was a challenge regarding the funds from the Department of Education in Mpumalanga. Hence, the project was never switched on, so the schools that were connected were never switched on. But then what then happened, 42 Technologies then took the project to Vodacom to continue the project. Hence, you were left with the equipment that is sitting at this course. But that equipment is owned by 42 Technologies, not by Centec. Hence, Centec could not go and retrieve the equipment. But the schools, as far as we were told, the schools are connected by Vodacom. Yeah, thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members.
Thank you, sir. I see the kind of policy that I have promoted to women. Just the four of you, maybe you're forgetting to come with them. Next time, I think we'll come with them. Okay. Members, there with our presentation, can we engage questions and can go, in that order. Can select member Kilenia, member and member of Shin, and member Kilenia, then member Shin. In that order, please.
Yes, and can you just give us an indication, can we go to any of the entities? We don't get to do it.
I think so, yeah. Whoever is, you know, person the question will come to our rescue. And others may feel that they are not, you know, really long for that entity, but they do have others. We're here as a collective, I believe so. Thank you.
Jefferson, thank you very much. Thank you very much for everybody's presentation. Chair, I just wanted to, at the outset, say I'm a little concerned about. And I understand that broadband infra is new in the GPTS and so is CICA, et cetera, and they used to report to other departments. So the department must first gel. But I'm very concerned that it appears to me that we have role confusion to a large extent and duplication. And that is not going to make it easy for us to achieve our goals. And I can make some examples, but I just want to indicate that keep on saying role duplication. As far as Centec's role, for instance, is, which is the last presentation we've had, we see that they're working on the back of USADA. And then, to a certain extent, I have a concern about the expression about, as far as we know, according to Vodacom, the schools are connected. Now, Chairperson, what we really need hands-on confirmation so that we know exactly what the position is. Now, I'm just talking schools now, but we will not achieve the broadband objectives if we don't have a hands-on approach. That's the first thing. The second thing is, Chairperson, I would like to hear from ICASA. You can go onto the internet at any time and you can... I just want to remember which presentation referred to the backbone of... first of all, the department's slide is very helpful about the gap analysis, because that clearly illustrates to us where we have overtrading almost, and that is usually what happens if you don't regulate. People go, and everybody goes to where they can make maximum profit, which is the urban areas and the metros. So all the departments and all the state-owned entities, primary focus should be underserviced areas, which is not a lucrative market for private operators to service. Now, if we look at that, and if we look, compare it to some of the plans and rollouts that we have had, it is clear that whereas we have a focus in a department to have those districts identified and to move away from the Western Cape and Gauteng, which is where everybody is making handsome profits, some departments and some of the entities are still focusing on those two areas. And in this regard, I specifically want to mention CETA. Now, that gives me the distinct impression that the gap analysis, and I trust that it's informed, and maybe the DG can just tell us, what informs that analysis? Is it quality, evidence-based research? Where did we get that map from? So that we can work all from a map which is well-informed in terms of hard evidence of backbone. But once we've established that, Shepherd, then we move to the issue of the last mile. Now, here we're sitting with the problem. We see that under gap analysis, we see Telkom sits with a very good footprint. But Telkom being a listed company, government being the major shareholder, 54%, but because the Johannesburg Stock Exchange is very strict, that they may not come to present to us to give forecasts, etc., etc., otherwise they lose their listing. We're also sitting in a situation that we can't hear from them what is the state of the backbone. And the copper, specifically, the last mile. Do we have fiber connection? Because the department has given us a clear indication that that is where the problem lies. It's the last mile at into the homes and the schools and the facilities. Now, if Telkom sits with the best footprint in the country, and we don't engage them at all on that, to what extent are we going to be able to build on that, and when are we going to see local loop unbundling? Remember, there was a period where there was a huge push. At some stage, some of the operators said, we're not so interested because we will connect. But we all realize that as technology has moved, some of it can effectively be downloaded with wireless connections. You really need ADSL or similar connections. Now, that is the concern. I want to know from ICASA, have they moved on the regulation of local loop to make it accessible? Because remember, the minister is very focused that there must be open competition on services, not on infrastructure. Because infrastructure has been paid off many moons ago, in particular Telkom's infrastructure check. And I'm concerned that we don't get that comprehensive picture. Now, Shepherd, I really have so many questions that I wanted to pose on individual presentations. But I thought, let me, by way of introduction, mention my overarching concerns so that we just get a better clarity. I just want to go, for instance, to one of the slides, and it's slide 10 of CETA, where we're getting feedback on progress made. And I want to know, if we read CETA's slide 10, it says program progress, Telkom, MSA and Broadband Infra about long-term agreements are in place. Then we're saying a fledged broadband program for the Western Cape, and then that they're also working on the Gauteng provincial broadband capacity and requirements were also reviewed. Now you see, Chair, that is what my concern. My concern is it should go away from those provinces. And unless all entities take hands and effect that change in the country, we will never bridge the digital gap. We will never bridge it. So just clarity on that, Chair, will take us a long way. And then I want also just mention that on the department slide 7, they referred to the development of e-skills. And I know we have the institute. It's come wrong. But again, government must be careful not to duplicate services. We have a Department of Higher Education. Now, mention was made of Department of Basic Education, etc. But we must be very mindful that we don't utilize scarce resources and duplicate functions again. There must be interaction with the Department of Higher Education. But skill development, chairperson, training in technical colleges, etc., universities of technology, that's a higher education function. Yes, teacher education is a higher education function. So if we now say provide ICT training for teachers, it's not the department's focus. It should not be there. They should establish a link to say, in order for us to service and to have the requisite skills, this is what we would like the responsibility of DHET to be in this whole plan. So, Chair, in conclusion, I think what we have is it seems that there is almost a plan, but I can't comprehensively see that plan with everybody's clear responsibilities stipulated, and that is my concern. And as I say, maybe because it's new, maybe because every entity, and you know, there's talk about amalgamation, that was one on the slide of the department. And by the way, very nice slide. It's particularly nice if you view them on the iPad. But all I'm saying is just that I'm concerned about that, and we need some answers on it doesn't help. There's a presentation on roadshows. It's broadband intricate. It's slide 8. Which responsibility is it to make people aware of e-governance services? We must have one service provider that is conducting those. And also, who comes to attend these roadshows? Number of delegates, 153, and Double Hotel, number of women, etc. I'm concerned that we are not focused. So, that, and clear, crisp and clear about everybody's role, so that it could dovetail and it become a real master plan. I'm happy that we have heard that there's a benchmark on Korea. We all know what they've achieved. But we must improve on that, because we can use that to check ourselves, but we must improve on that. Jay, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Member Lunyan.
Thank you, Mr. President. Morning, Comrade. Not Comrade. I'm sorry for the... Okay, I've got three questions for the department. Right? How do you monitor consumer active for the development of online public services? This is the first one. The second one, the department has set a national ICT police review panel. Have the green paper on that being published? And then, when we are doing an oversight on March by the committee, what good story to tell us? And then, let me go to yourself. How do you take your plan to rural areas? Or what have you done to make it so rural areas have knowledge about your plan? Let's go to ICASA. Yes, I cannot give us time frames on policy direction on high demand spectrum and digital literacy according to your presentation, which is on last paper. Let's go to Frida. On slide number 9, bullet 4, can you please give us time frames to Frida? And then all of the entities, we all hear about your plans, what, how is aligned to about, how is aligned to South African Connected Country Program plan? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Let me also join my colleague to welcome the presentation. Indeed, they were really informative. My first question will be based on the department. How do you make sure that women are empowered through ICTs as well by a board and commission? Do you have strategy in place to extend fiber network to bring it closer to the end user? We are saying we are going to meet the target by 2020. Is it really achievable as we are looking now, 2020, we have only 5 years. And then ICASA, how are you going to reach people in rural areas on road? So, Chairperson, I wonder if, I just want to understand, because from both friends in Falco and ICASA, I don't really get convinced if there is a relationship. I just want to understand the relationship and how do they help each other, especially our SMMEs. And then on the, we have non-governmental organization to all of you, ICASA, ICASA, Speaker, Board, Bandit, Falco, and Centric. Can you please tell us how do we have our NGOs in different provinces? And then what Benji Barco was talking about the internship. How do you advise your internship to select people? Because I think most of us, we are living and rural people outside these opportunities. And then you were mentioning, I think Rabbi Killian has mentioned it on our roadshow. You have 400 women who registered from Guaya. Are all provinces have us from 400 women that are there? Because most of the time we are looking at, you say 400 women to find that the whole 400 is from one province. So can we check on that? Sensec, likely I'm from Northwest, and then we are having four districts there, but I can see you are only providing one district. Why you don't make sure that every district, because we have KJ, Dr. Ruth, Bujanala, Nagamugiru, why you don't accommodate each district with something, because all things that are going here is only Dr. Sukumuzi, which is my district name, but that is where I come from. It's only one, but Bujanala is three. What are you intending to do with other districts? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Member Kulo, Member Mackenzie.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just from the department generally, and please help me just contextualize. You will set policy and set direction, and all the other entities that are here, state-owned companies, the regulator, they would then follow your directives and your policies. So you would sort of set the vision, and the rest would work to implement it. I'm on the right track. I think as you've highlighted so many of the projects that you're busy with, I kind of lost track because you're clearly a really busy department. But the one thing that was missing from from everything you detailed was a timeline. And I would suggest that anybody, and I echo my colleague, anybody that comes to present before this committee, give us an idea of what sort of timeline you're talking about. Say you're working on a project or you're engaging with a stakeholder. Say we will have done this by May next year and we will move on to the next step by June next year. So I know when I come to the end of my parliamentary term, the end of this 5 years, how far down the line you are in the work that you're doing. And I'll use an example, the digital development objectives for the district municipalities. When is this likely to be completed? And that's just one example. When we talk about closing the gaps and extending fiber infrastructure to remote areas, also by when are we planning to do this and which areas? Because I think if you have those targets in mind, you communicate them to us and you communicate them to the entities, we'll get a better idea of when we're going to connect the country. At the moment, Anikatha mentioned 100% broadband penetration by 2020/2030. Well, that's a kind of 10 years, 2020 or 2022 or 2028. So give us an idea where we are in terms of the progress we're making, because I think that's what we need to measure, is what is the speed of the progress? How much ground are we covering on the goal towards 100% broadband penetration? In terms of also to the department, in terms of the slide, you referred to the 2011 census, which sort of shows the coverage. Hasn't audit been done beyond that as to how much infrastructure is in the ground, both from the private and public sectors? And if it isn't, do you have a plan to do that audit, and when will you do it by? ICASA made some mention around that as well. I'd be interested to know that. You spoke of coordination between the private and the public sectors. What mechanisms do you have in place to facilitate the process? Like what forums and engagement bodies do you have to do that? I'd also echo the comment made by the representatives from Broadband Infraco about the open access network concept. If you could just elaborate a little bit on that for me, please, as well as the infrastructure sharing concept. I'm very aware that, and I use the investment in cell phone technology, for example. There's a massive investment required by the private sector to put infrastructure in place to build a network, and it's a huge investment, running into billions and billions of rand. How do you then allow that network where investors have put in a whole lot of money in building a network, and somebody else comes along and then you allow them to piggyback on that network? What incentives, besides spectrum availability, can you offer the private sector to encourage them to open up their networks to essentially what are competitors to them? And, I mean, I would think, for example, termination rates, and you must help me out here because I'm kind of stumbling in the dark, termination rates you would use in cell phone technology to you know, as people cross over from network to network to allow the companies to recoup some of the investments. Would you apply a similar thing in this exercise? Sorry, I had a very late night, so if my thoughts are incoherent, please excuse me. Broadband Infraco, you mentioned the near-tel costs that you were incurring by connecting to their POPs, that they were very expensive. And then you went on to talk a fair amount about grants and about looking for further government funding. And it concerns me when public funds are being used to facilitate competition with the private sector. You know, sometimes we look at the public purse as being virtually bottomless, so we can provide anything we need to without actually being competitive, whereas, of course, the private sector has to generate profit, has to generate return on investment for their shareholders. And it seems a very unfair competition. So I'm not just talking about, about Malawi Capital. There are costs involved in running a company, in starting them, in getting people on board, in retaining people, in installing infrastructure, and in generating a return on investment. So if you could just highlight how you would then, how your costs can be less than, for example, Neotel. Centec, you guys are just so on top of your mandate. It's again, it's a pleasure to see you returning to the committee with the detailed answers that you gave earlier. I was very interested in your satellite, and perhaps government should have come to you instead of to the Russians and had you launch that spy satellite, because it would probably be up there at the moment. In terms of the Mpumalanga School project, can you just tell me what the challenge was? You mentioned the challenge regarding the funds. What was that challenge? Thanks very much.
Thank you very much,
Mr.
Machine.
Thank you, Chairperson. From the presentations, I'm really not sure if we're talking about the South Africa SA Connect. Is everything that we've been given today part of SA Connect? Is anybody actually managing SA Connect and pulling it all together? Because there seems to be, to me, no one really managing it. Maybe I'm wrong, maybe the department is doing that. Also, there's been absolutely no mention of the Broadband Council. They've been in existence now for 1.5 years. Are they involved at all? What are they doing? They're appointed in line with the, a critical part of driving the SA Connect implementation, and yet they're invisible. Why is that? Surely their role is to actually give policy and guidance and to pull all the things together. To me, there's, just for all of this, there's just too many bits and pieces that don't seem to gel. Then I'd like to, this is a department, we talk about digital readiness in the future, and we talk about the digital development objectives. Are these your chapters on the SA Connect? Would you talk about phase one of DD prioritizes the NHI footprint? Now, what is DD? That's digital development. Okay, I beg your pardon there. You've got your four-pronged strategy here. Now, you talk about phase one. Now, but then what are the other priorities? You also talk on now this slide number six, that the development objective of piggybacking on the NHI. But you say that the NHI pilot is being piloted by the Department of Basic Education in 10 municipalities. I presume that's what DBE means. Is that meant to be the Department of Health? Or are you piggybacking on schools? I'm not quite sure what that means there. Also, you're saying that your biggest infrastructure gap is the last mile. What is actually happening there? Because there's been policies back and forth about that that haven't really gone anywhere. And what I hear is that, and I support Honourable Killian's view, that there seems to be a tremendous amount of duplication and roles here. What the purpose of SA Connect is not to do away with the duplication and give the whole process a more focused energy. So one wonders what happened to the driving force of SA Connect. Then, particularly about policy, I'm told that the High Demand Spectrum Policy Directive was processed about a week or two ago, and that's due for publication fairly soon. Can you give us some idea of that, please? Also, what policies are on the last mile? And also, if you're busy developing any policies on things like infrastructure sharing, which I also believe is engaging your mind at the moment. You say you're... we had this, what was it last week, about the cost of communication, and one of the biggest problems in contributing to costs of communications is the bureaucracy surrounding the rollout of infrastructure. I'm talking about Wiley's, we're talking about different policy between provincial and local government. What is actually happening? Is SA Connect, or is someone looking at streamlining those processes? It wasn't there somewhere, but I don't know who's actually supposed to be driving that. Who's actually in charge of driving the strategies and policy development for each of us? Is it CETA? Is it the Department of Public Services Administration? Is it CIP15? You know, one doesn't actually know how all these things interconnect, if they should, whether they should just be one group. Can I have some clarity on who is the champion in government for e-government strategies? Is there one? Should there be one? Because we have, as I said, we've got CIP15, we've got ESA Connect, we've got CETA, we've got everybody doing bits and pieces. Is there one champion that can actually say, hey guys, this is, let's set a clear vision of where we're going, and this is how we're going to do it. I was interested, broadband info, that the Department of Science and Technology only won 170 million. Is that right? Why? Why do they owe you this money? They usually are very swift. They're probably the most efficient government department. So I'm actually interested to know why they're dragging their heels on paying you. Then I'd also like to hear from all the entities. You all know that there's going to be a huge squeeze on money. So I'm wanting to know what particular challenges you all have in meeting your new, I presume, downwardly revised targets and budgets. What programs are likely to face the chop or be pruned? I assume, knowing it as what Western Cape provincial government is having to prune out its budget over the next 3 years, so we're talking about billions of rand, one assumes that amongst all the entities here today, there's similar kinds of stringency coming down the road. If you can give us some heads up as to what that might be and the impact it will have on the rollout of broadband. Thank you.
Thank you, Ben Machine. Let me also just a few questions. Was your hand up?
Ask this matter. Thank you, Ben Machine. And also thank you for the presentation from all the presenters, all the entities. I think my colleagues have cut me in some of the areas, because for me also is that we all report to the same department, so there needs to be some integrated approach and working or sharing, instead of working in silos, wanting to outperform or outshine the other entity when we have the same goal. Very clear, you all have the NDP. So I think it's important that there needs to be that cooperation so that you save people, including having to meet with provinces to be on the same path. I think I saw the department has got the targeted district, the 8, and USAPA also has targeted the same. It is difficult that there should be, you know, once upon a time in Job, today Soweto lose maps. It's when the mayor took a political decision and said everything goes there. And we have visible improvement of the area. So instead of the others going that way, others going that way, you know, small and bits and pieces, why can't we, you know, like in phases and also with time frames, that during this period we're dealing with this age, the next phase is this one, and then like that, taking those chunks of running out. And also agreeing with my colleague on working also closely with Telkom, because there is the infrastructure on ground already. So why not tap into that so that you utilize what they've already done and add yours. Including the issue of the optic fiber vis-à-vis the copper, because even Zambia that produces copper, they've moved to fiber, not utilizing their copper. So And we get all these blackouts and what it is because of that, of the copper. And the fiber is unsolvable, it's useless to steal because you can't do much with it. I think the minister was saying trees and his presentation or input was on IT and using ICT. So I think this commission, we shouldn't be here sitting with so many papers. We should be leading by example to other committees, you know, being smart, just using sticks and what have you. But this is harder. I just want to find out today, I saw something as I was going through the news 24 now that started with on digital media. They are launching 3 new TV channels today. So I wanted if you can bring light to that. I saw the one is for targeting the age 2 to 11 and so forth, so which is interesting. But I thought probably you can help us with that. The issue of the cost to communicate, I wanted to, I don't know who will take it, I put the question with the CASA and also with Broadband Infraco. I also read that I had on the radio, on the news and some station, and I also was going through on internet. I'm not sure if it had to do with that, the Africa cable system that you spoke about, but that in Ghana, they've reduced up to 90% the cost to communicate, whether it's family unit or individual, including one international, probably today, connectivity. So with South Africa being so progressive and being the New York of Africa or the London of Africa, and we feel it's very difficult for us, very expensive to communicate. And a lot of other people out there looking up to us for communication. I also agree with the issue that we need to also look back besides the entities that report to telecommunication, but also other departments that benefit from the ICT, the education, higher or basic, and then the private sector. I think the private sector also shouldn't be left alone because they benefit. They shouldn't just be looking at profit. They should work together, the department, in ensuring that we reduce the cost of rolling out and providing services. I think we will await that pilot with USAFA. We'd like that the collaboration with ICASA, the Magwen project. But I also thought that when you spoke of those, the districts, and that there's a total of 195 other service local municipalities identified across the 7 priority provinces. We'd like to read a breakdown so that we know exactly what you're talking about. And when we do our oversight, we have focus areas and not just say in seven provinces and not knowing where to go. So I think for us that will be helpful. Honorable Hillian stole some of the things I wanted to say, so that at least we save the time. I was also interested in the issue of programs in Fraco, the what GST owes you, at least that I am a member of that committee also, so it would be helpful to know. The the young women program in tents and what like that. Wanted to know from what age to take those young women, and what qualifications must they have to be able to qualify for the training or taking it as intent. Yeah, I think I'm being covered on others. If there's anything I can submit anything. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Masako. You know, so the person speaks and talks about something as much. No, that's person from Gauteng. This is his mass problem. Do you like what you said? Okay, thank you. Let me just add a few to the questions that have already been alluded to. For the department, why has it taken so long for you to allow Robin Fraco to participate in the ICT policy review panel? You know, the positions for both persons, such as is it a way to land them in the activity of the department? We don't know about that. Do we hear from you? And on your conclusion and way forward, there's a bullet talking about collaboration with provinces, DGPS to finalize the second phase, a comprehensive planning by July 2015. In your management, in your focus management, do you foresee or anticipate any obstacles that may temper your time frame, July 2015, is that around the corner? And on the CASA, regarding practice for all schools, health facilities, and other public institutions, what are your priority areas, this one, because you cannot connect all the schools at once, and what would be the determining factors to your priorities? For centers, I don't think it is clearly defined, you know, your role in the South African Connectivity Policy, I mean South African Connect Policy. Can you please elaborate on it to clarify your role? I think many questions have been asked already. I want to go to that and repeat them.
Okay. Thank you very much for the question. I think we would take a few questions and maybe allow the entities to come in. Let me just start with the question of the participation of Dr. Infrafa. I think it's unfortunate that we need to keep on addressing it. Because Program Infraco is participating in one of the subcommittees which deals with infrastructure and services, which is in line with their role. I don't think it is the right person to want to detail where they should participate, but it's an in-house matter that we can address. It means that we need to, I need to sit with the CEO because so that we can work on some of how we work. Because the point is, there is a structure of the ICT policy review, which is a meeting of the chairs. I think there are five chairs which are participating as the chairs. And then below the chairs, you've got the panel. Below the panel, you've got the subcommittee. So what we do is that depending on the expertise or the entity, we will then allocate them to the different committees, which deals with, you know, their participation. And in my view, Company Infoco is well assigned in terms of the infrastructure and services, but it's something that I think is an in-house matter that we would deal with in terms of how do we work. Of course, it's a new issue that is reporting to us. It will take time. Even the issue of the whole issue of government guarantee. Of course, we will receive a government guarantee. We are considering the matter with the national treasury. Doesn't necessarily mean that you apply for the money, you get the money. There are processes in government how you apply things and how things have been dealt with. So those are small soft issues that I think I'm saying, Chair. You know, I'll raise it with the minister in terms of how to deal with some of those soft issues. Now, with regard to the submission of the business case, I think the documentation is not necessarily going to be a challenge. The issue is the funding. Because if you look at how we approach the implementation of broadband, we said let's start with phase one, so that we can see how, you know, we grapple with implementation. Because one thing that we have as government is to come up with policies. But where it becomes really a test is on the implementation. Like, let's come up with a phase one business case, which we did, and we can announce that the Minister of Finance, when he announced the budget speech, we've got an allocation. I think it's run it. It is 2015-16 in the next few years, no? So there has been an allocation for broadband. Of course, because there's no new money, what we've been allocated to. National Treasury had to move money in terms of programs that are not moving. So I'm not interested in the scenario that we're in as government. So therefore it means that we need to ensure that we spend the money properly. Because if we don't bring the money, it probably have to move to another program that requires money. Now, what we then agreed we would do is to then work on the comprehensive business case. But broadband is probably one of the most, I can't think of another program that is as complex as broadband in government. And maybe one doesn't have an appreciation of other sectors, but it's probably the most complex project because of it involves a lot of stakeholders. And you've got state participation, you've got a private sector, you've got so many government departments. Because while they are coordinating to ensure that the infrastructure is there, but what makes the uptake is about the applications, the content, the end user devices, and those must be funded. And that work belongs to the different government departments, whether it's basic education, the training. Even though the slide talks about training, I think it doesn't imply, we're not implying that we would be responsible. What we are saying is that training needs to happen. We're working with the Department of Basic Education to ensure that the teachers are trained and all of this. That's the complexity of the broadband program. Now, the second complexity is the availability of ministry schools. I mean, for example, in the department, when we're finalizing the policy, we had vacancies, like we didn't have a DDG responsible for infrastructure. We then had to go through that process of appointing DDGs with former Minister Karen and also Kifile. It's also difficult to attract the necessary skills as government, but I think we were lucky when we were recruiting them that we were able to actually appoint engineers because you can't implement what you don't understand. That was probably one of the challenges that we had to say, let's get engineers in the department. If we're going to succeed in this program, you just cannot move with the program with people who are not in the space of broadband. But the capacity that we have is not adequate. But what we then did, because we realized that we were in crisis when we were finalizing the policy, is to enter into an agreement with CSIR. They're quite well capacitated in terms of technical skills. Initially, sub-15, when they were appointing the coordinators, the broadband infrastructure was appointed as the coordinator. What we then did as a department was to approach CSIR to assist us in terms of how to capacitate us in the short term. But it turns out that as we're working with CSIR, the Department of Economic Development, I think they like CSIR, they then appointed CSIR as sub-15 coordinator. So the GIS meeting that we're looking to has actually been done by CSIR through the partnership that we have. The information that they've used has been collected to the different operators, including Telkom. But unfortunately, the information has been collected under non-disclosure agreement. So we don't even have the database. Of course, we've seen the information has been displayed. But there's a confidential in terms of the information cannot be provided because of certain competition issues. What we've also done as a department, when we were engaging with National Treasury on policy, especially the funding issues, Treasury actually advised us, I think it was a very good advice to say, look, this is a very complex project. We deal with this kind of project day to day, and they work on energy and all the different sectors. They then advised us to engage the unit in Treasury called Government Technical Advice Assistance Center. It's got the necessary skills in terms of, you know, implementing or oversight of big government programs. So what we did also was to enter into an agreement with GTEC so that they can assist us with coming up with the program management structure and methodology, how do we break down. So all the processes that we are following is because of we're working with GTEC. Like, for example, the first issue, one thing that they emphasized was that we work with government departments. So, one thing we are good is asking money. Now we've got the money and the inability to spend the say, let's break down the implementation into phases so that you don't have this lump sum of money that you can't spend because you've not done the necessary process. Hence why phase one and phase two. Now, we've been working very, very closely with GTEC, and I must say, you know, in terms of methodology, when the way they engage on project management, you actually really get surprised that as government, sometimes we don't necessarily give ourselves the credit. in terms of capacity and skills. There are certain areas in government that are really excellent in terms of capacity, and she takes one of those environments really the way they excel with regard to program or project management and program. So we benefit as a department with regard to that. So part of what we are doing, hence why even the Minister of Education attended the Step 15 meeting that was chaired by the Minister, is coordination with the different departments. Because one of the lessons that we learned, when we were collecting the 1,650 schools as a result of the legacy for the 2024 World Cup, the initial agreement that we entered into with the Department of Education is that we were going to be responsible just for the connectivity, basic education, they'll just do the devices and all of that. Come time for implementation, the devices are going to be seen, which those are the problems of the implementing programs. We then have to amend the contract so that we cover everything to demonstrate that this is what. So one of the risks that we have is the availability of the devices by different government departments, but also them having the necessary capacity to access that. So those are the things that we are engaging them. As to whether everything will be sorted out, from our experience, this is a project that we only have the risk, but you can't stop moving. So our view is that let's move, let's push. We would still be able to achieve some of the critical steps. The information was coming for. There was also a question raised by Honorable Shin in terms of who is managing SA Connect. We are responsible for the coordination of SA Connect. Because of the complexity of SA Connect, sometimes it may look like we're not coordinated, but we are. Like, for example, engaging with even the entities that are reporting to us. It's much easier now that they're all reporting to us than before. I think before it was a lot tougher to engage CETA and also to engage with an Infocom. The natural thing is, you know, everyone wants to be the one to be responsible for broadband. That has been our observation. Those are things that are interesting because everyone believes that they must just be the one and the rest must just be shut down. That's the reality. Hence why our discussions of the association are happening, because we know and we've observed that unless we deal with some of these duplications, we'll never succeed. Because all that we're going to be doing is spending time with petrified. But petrified are not going to get our services out there. What we need is to get to sort out all these unnecessary things so that we're able to move forward. Even including how we engage with provinces. We've even asked entities that some of them would like them just to engage so that they can align themselves. It doesn't mean that everything must wait for the department to be in a meeting for entities to engage. And you know that they are talking. There's been very good progress, not that all of them are with us than before. And that I think can report as very good progress. Even from the minister side, I mean, he has engaged the chairs of the different entities on how we can work together on some of these issues.
Thanks, Gigi, and honourable members. I think on the question of the National Broadband Advisory Council, it has established early this year, and the council is meeting. We are engaging with the council also to see how they provide advice to the work that we're doing. So we constantly provide them the progress on the work and also soliciting advice and input from them. There will be several meetings, we're also establishing working groups under that, also for detailed analysis of issues, open access as well, for them to see how they advise on that. And we talked about that, I think it was a question about what's open access, the different definitions of open access in the department is our that. And so we commissioned a study, which I indicated that it would consider by the end of this month, which also will help us come up with definitions which we can engage with the interested parties so to find a common agreement in the country in terms of what is open access so that everyone at least is aligned in that regard. That also help us to define also through each other the infrastructure sharing framework that's required to facilitate or eliminate the duplication. I think this did speak to the issue of the mapping that was done to inform the gap analysis. There have been extensive details in terms of the mapping issue of the up to the district level to understand the gaps that are there, but there is still information that is still being required. We're working with the CAD as well to get that information, also to do further analysis,
also in terms of the wireless side of the infrastructure network, sort of with a comprehensive analysis, so we know where is it to get. But whilst we're doing that, as part of the engagement that we're having with the provinces, they're also validating that the true gap based on the analysis that we've done from desktop infrastructure. So we're able to deal with that as well. And in terms of the role clarification, he spoke about that we are in a big coordinating role, and there are several stakeholders who are involved. In the other slide where we try to indicate the different roles who does what in the problem, including what the private sector is doing. So as much as moving the dynamic environment in the complex one in terms of this problem, but we seem to having an overall understanding and appreciation of what's happening. I think it will get better as we further engagement with all the stakeholders. And the framework that we use for coordination, we have established multi-stakeholder committees, both additional and also even including the provincial, and also through SOUDA as well, the metros and local spheres. But we also use the established 15, which Minister spoke about, where all the public sector get to participate in terms of infrastructure all out. But also working on a framework on how to engage with the private sector, the different forums that we've got. We have engaged with them on one-on-one basis, but we want to create a framework where we're able to engage with them so that we have a comprehensive appreciation of the issues. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Member. I should touch on the issue of how we incentivize the private sector to invest. It's worth mentioning that our digital development program actually speaks to that. It speaks to government aggregating its demand and saying state of the different departments actually going on acquisition approaches where each department acquires services on its own. We are saying that there is power in accumulating all that demand and saying to the sector players, we are one government and we have now power in volumes and in mass, and are you able to give us a good deal on the services that you are going to be acquiring from. So as much as we want to support our private sector, but also say that we want a good deal as we do that. And that also informs the smart procurement approaches that will be undertaking going forward and under digital development. So digital development seeks directly towards incentivizing private sector. And then we also would touch on the concerns around the telecom footprint and the infrastructure there that's been available. Can we ignore it? I think the approach of the department is that you know we do not. If they are one of the entities we are engaging as we consider the way forward on SOC rationalization, we are engaging them very closely together with the other state-owned entities that are under the department. So I thought maybe that gives some insight that yes, we are looking at the circles.
Honorable, let me just come in on the issue of ICT policy review and DPSA. With regard to the ICT policy review, we actually got that in the discussion document. If you recall, about 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago when we were here, we did inform the committee that we will be conducting a discussion document. I think Minister signed it off on Monday. It should be out, the gazette should be out today, except that we only gazetted a two-page but advising people in terms of where they will find the discussion document because it's a thick document, so they would specify the URL in terms of where people can have access to the document. On the issue of DSA and e-government, when we started on this reconfiguration of government and identified the different legislations in line with what we briefed in terms of what the different ministers would be responsible for. From our side, meaning that our minister is responsible for the telecommunication postal service and also issues of government, we did identify two critical issues which empowers DPSA or the Minister of Public Service Administration with regard to e-government, which is the Digital Council and also the Public Service Act, which is, I think, it's Section 1G of the, or one, I forgot the number, but it's Section 1G or something like that, the Public Service Act, which empowers the minister. It's one of the issues that we raised in the reconfiguration discussion. But unfortunately, it was not assigned or to Minister Gule. But there are discussions between ourselves because the legislation or things that are currently now are with DPSA. Of course, CETA is important to us in terms of how then do we work together from the e-government program. Well, we do note the mandate from our side, but you can't completely say that DPSA will not have any role at all with regard to e-government. It's about how then to be then come up with that methodology of working together. I can report from our side with DPSA, there are interactions. It's just about really coming up with a clear framework, which also assists us in also in our own interaction with the Digital Council and also I suppose DPSA's own interaction with CETA. So those are some of the discussions we need to finalize. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you. Can
we
respond to
the
question from the Minister of Public Service?
Thank you. Madam Chair, Honorable Madam Chair. You can appreciate one thing with this committee. Sometimes when a policy is speaking, you would think that it is the regulator. But truly speaking, it just shows you the spirit of collegiality that exists between policy and regulatory. I always said we are not the regulator that is in Alaska regulating South Africa. No, we are also South Africa bound. We belong to the same country and all our efforts is to make South Africa much better. So regulator or policy count for nothing except in building South Africa and where South Africa must go in ICT. That is why I say thank you to the honorable members of this portfolio committee. I remember when Honorable Killian used to always say, why are you going this way and policy is going this way? But now you can see we are all in the same boat. We are all now trying to maintain our positions, but the interactive elements are becoming more and more pronounced. So really we have a good story to tell that we are moving along those lines. Now I will let Dr. Sobika to elaborate on some of the other questions that you want us to answer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be very precise in the list of questions. On the issue of the regulation of the local, unbundling of the local loop and regulations pertaining to that, we are currently busy with a RIA, which is a regulatory impact analysis. It should be completed by the end of this financial year, and we are sure to share that result with you. On the issue of the time frames of the policy, I think the DG addressed that. On the high demand spectrum policy, I think the DG addressed that. We are currently awaiting that policy. On the question of how we will reach people in the rural areas, what we do is we assign, we've got regional staff who work in each province. And what we do, we assign them with the list of regulation projects that we're embarking with, and they then do the consumer education tied to those regulatory projects. If members would like to have further detail of that, I will definitely ask the consumer division to give you the details thereof in writing. Same applies to the question of our work with NGOs. We don't necessarily work in any structural manner with NGOs. They have spoken to us on different regulatory issues such as the cost to communicate, and we listen to them. They make public presentations in our hearings. We listen to them and we consider their input. More than that, we don't really do any projects with the NGO. On the question of broadband by 2020 or 2030, the policy sticks to both deadlines. We are, in our spectrum licensing processes, asserting timeframes which are earlier than this. And I cannot say more because that particular process is under wraps, but we can have an offline discussion if you so like. Furthermore, it is also tied to the work that our minister is doing. Madam Chair, you will endorse if we could have an offline discussion on that one. On the issue of the gap analysis, we did a spectrum audit study, and we released the IMT roadmap tied to that study, where we identify licensees which must move out of certain bands, so that those bands are then properly licensed for the new spectrum environment, the IMT or LTE broadband project. If members are keen to see the document, it should be on our website today. As far as I'm aware, it was sent to the government printed for publication. And then on the issue of the development of infrastructure sharing, it has been a project that we are extremely passionate about. And we have a concept paper which we hope to publish in the first week of December, which will speak to the just how far we think the country can go. Infrastructure sharing obviously lends itself to driving costs down for the communications environment. From where I'm sitting, you cannot really separate that particular project from the cost to communicate. The two are totally integrated. On the question of on digital media, the honourable members asked, but we're just going to say we authorise channels almost on a monthly basis from different subscription operators, and that is how they obtained the authorisation to publish those channels. Further questions prior to that, we'll respond in writing. And I think the last question was on what are the priority areas for us, the schools, health, etc. Madam Chair, what we have with us is a list that we obtained from USASA nationwide of the underserved areas. And then we have another list from the Department of Education nationwide on the list of schools. And same with health. What we are doing is we are collating all of that data as we sit here. We are collecting all of that data and we are going to build it into the spectrum licensing process so that operators first service as a matter of priority the underserviced area before they move to the metropole. And this I can put in the public because we have long been saying this to operators that is the model we are going to follow. In the past, we used to give them spectrum and monitor the obligations afterwards. This time, we are doing it in reverse. We are saying, first, do the obligations, and then you can activate spectrum as and where you wish. So we have learned our lesson in that regard. I hope we have addressed your questions. Otherwise, the ones that I've pointed out to, we will return in writing.
Is it a request?
Yes, please, Chair. It's a request.
Okay. we do know that the 60 and 2 global regulations. So in our view, there's no bureaucracy in regards to the role that's supposed to be in the institution itself. How we can change rural services check, we have certainly satisfied for this in the country. We might be facing constitutional satisfaction, all the constitutional satisfaction, and that is in the Sinawa Park in our society. We also participate in the global process in our society. We use also what we call the Atlantic area to direct the way we know that this is the area of which we work with. We encourage any particular contact to start involving and talking and engaging on the topic that we're coming to use. It involves going to the media, it involves going to the PC, it also involves going to the schools, in the country, and also to start asking the owners of your community to go and so forth. So we can get a communication in terms of how we can pay. In terms of our language regarding for the certainly two of the sexual communities in here. And I have a belief that we, for the community, go and tell them that they are still there. We are also thinking that the other person that can stay in the area, we force them to do that and get up there to the level of community. They are very reactive to our customers to us. They are very reactive to us. We went and did fight in the area where they came and did it, and did fight in the area where they came and did it. We gave them two information and two people to share it. We very much from the GIS and we show that we are the last thing to come away to teach us about it. So that the commission will do the check. Now that then informs the progress that we need to do for us to do the action. And those programs are very much in sync with what the commission is doing. It is not in sync with that. We spend out the process program that we need to do. It spend out the same type of school process the same type of communication that we should do, including the speech and other kinds. So we are increasing and we are part of everything that we do. You saw Shekhawi that we are licensed in the provinces and in the teachers are in the country. So we are very much aligned everything that we do to guide the movement. By the school teachers. As for the relationship with the GIA, we want to replace for the technical expertise. Two, they consume by the one professional and another one. We are leveraging for those two. We share information, we learn together, and they are the expertise that they provide. We know where they start, we know where they end. And they are very clear about the role that they have. They have to be a campaign into the power of the government and the community. So we are very confident that we are going to be able to do that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will start with a question on enterprise development and the registration of the 400 women, but I'll do that collectively. This is a supply chain issue as part of implementation of policy of ensuring that our economy is transformed and upon realizing that we weren't getting small and medium enterprises responding to some of our tenants, we needed an intervention. So that intervention, we strategized and we said we will go out and look for women. We will tell them what it is that we do. We will tell them what opportunities are there. This is the supply chain management issue on the demand planning side. So we did get a whole lot of women coming, but upon reviewing on the information that they had provided, we realized that more information was required for people to be part of the sector, which is why I indicated that we've changed our strategy and are focusing on ensuring that we find those who are established and we can educate. We ensure that our suppliers, the big suppliers, shadow the smaller suppliers, and we ensure that we implement the industrial participation program when it comes to the original equipment manufacturers. So this is part of the responsibility of supply chain management. I do think that our policy is fully aligned with the broadened policy, and I think I addressed that specific issue. With regards to our internship program, we take in people that have got Bachelor of Engineering, BSc Electrical Engineering, BSc Computer Engineering and Computer Science, and for technicians, National Diploma in Electrical Engineering. So we do go to the institutions and we advertise through our website, because these are people at tertiary institutions and we have access to information. Clarity on DST. Broadband Infraco invested in the West Africa cable system to make the country ready for SKA. The DST has taken up that capacity, and as honorable members have indicated, they're very effective. We have agreed a date of payment. We need the money now. So we're discounting money financially so that we can have it today. And we need a guarantee to do that, because the commercial banks cannot necessarily do that for us right now. So the perception of members of the GST is very correct, that it's money that will come in at that period of time as per our agreement with the department. On the relationship between ourselves and USASA, I think the CEO of USASA has explained, but I think they have in their presentation on slide number 3, and if you look at that slide number 3, there's a section that says core and backhaul, that's where we play. We don't see ourselves struggling into their money. We provide the critical core backhaul infrastructure. And I think during the break we were indicating that some of the district municipalities that had been presented had been our obligation to put open access POPs. So we do have POPs in some of the districts that had been there. And in line with the policy, we hope that there won't be any duplication. On the issue of NeoTel, I think there are open access data centers. We understand what the price of data centers are, because Teraco, including Telkom itself, IS, Kichima, BCX, has got data centers. So I was saying to say that the prices are exorbitant, because we know what market-related prices are. So it's just a process that we are going through, that we look for commercial projects to deliver on on our mandate, and right now we are moving out and have got an agreement with Transnet to use facilities that they have, again, pay market-related prices. So the question there was not that we want the private sector to give us things at no cost, but to give us market-related prices, because we are in the sector and we have an understanding of what those market-related prices are. With regards to pruning of infrastructure programs, our programs are at this stage very much commercial based. Our under-service area obligations, we are engaging and have planned with SASA. I think that process would go through in the next budget cycle, because infrastructure has got to be maintained. You don't just put it down, it's got to be maintained and operated on. And the funding for those specific sites that are under service is something that we would consider, because initially we rolled out infrastructure to the unserviced areas. In some of the areas, we managed in one area to get an underserviced area license to actually utilize the network, but the costs for them are too high, or we end up having points of presence where there isn't initiation of access in those specific area. I think I have answered the questions related to broadband. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor from Center.
Thank you very much. That's your question. The chairperson asked part of the context question around what the Royal Centre case in SA Connect. The two parts of that answer. The first one is that we are continue working with the, or we continue participating with the department on the SOC rationalization project, which should hopefully provide an even better clarity on how the different SOEs reconfigure themselves moving forward. And that is under the management of the direction of the DG. But as we see it right now, there is recognition in SA Connect that there are areas that may not be reachable through the terrestrial infrastructure, fibers or even wireless broadband, and where satellite gas feeder can be the most effective way in the short term at least. And that's the role that we're playing there. And this comes out of the fact that whenever we do signal distribution, which is our core business, we distribute signals over using satellite to different sites. So we operate already very extensive satellite distribution facility. And over the years, we've used that to then provide connectivity solutions. We, I must say that that is going through, we've gone through a lot of lessons learned on how to use that to effectively provide interactions in an environment where the number of people accessing it is at a particular point or service at the same time, for example, in schools or multiple health centers. So we are upgrading that to make it more effective for internet access, and also more cost effective and also effective in terms of its usage. So that will be launching in the fourth quarter of this financial year, which is January March. And that is a facility moving forward. That is a facility that can, depending on how again the SOEs get rationalized, it can that facility can find itself in any one of the SOEs in the room, for example, that are directly related to providing broadband infrastructure. It does not necessarily have to fit and owned, be owned exclusively by a SENEC. The definitely in respect of providing services in more districts, that is not a problem. In fact, in respect of our CSI project, where we do schools connectivity for as part of the CSI project, there was a meeting with the minister where I think that this financial year, Northwest in particular, Northern Cape, Mpumalanga will be prioritized, and we'll make that input to the ministry as we discuss with them about where we install the specific schools that we do the installations. The issue around Malanga, Fruity Technologies were the one that was contracted to the provincial government, and whether there was funds between Fruity Technologies and the provincial government or between themselves and us is not clear. What we know is that there were problems between, eventually they could not pay for the services that were provided by CENTEC. And not clear whether there was a problem between them and the provincial government. We'll certainly take the comment that we should have more clear answers about what then happened, because eventually we participated that under a public service mandate. So the comment is taken. I think the gentleman was asking a question around whether our plans are aligned with the Connect. The intention is to, at least at a conceptual level, there is a need for, in the short term, for some kind of use of satellite services to fill the gaps, and there is some alignment there. And then another question, there was a general question about whether, due to budget constraints, there is any effect on our operations, but certainly not with respect to broadband or visit services. there's no effect on it. Thank you very much.
Chair, I will also start with the general question on roles, and especially in relation to the work we're doing with our daily and within case. It's not that we are ignoring the emphasis, it's because our work responds to requests as opposed to initiate a project. So a department would, whose responsibility it is, for instance, to provide health services, if you take NHI, the Department of Health would engage us to help with the provision of e-services in that space and would respond appropriately. Most of the work in that space at the moment, especially that we're talking about, that the colleagues have been talking about in this room, is the work that is at planning stage and so on. And as soon as there are concrete project in place, our work will be amended accordingly. So there is other work that we do in other areas, but it is driven primarily by instruction from departments. So that's why emanates out of that, as opposed to ignoring the need for prioritizing the areas that have been prioritized in the discussion. And I take the comment on the benchmark to Korea that we do need to improve, and we think that the lessons that we've gotten from there should help us avoid some of the pitfalls that they had come across. And the Chief Technology Officer next to me here is in constant engagement with them and other countries to understand those. On the issue of the Flight 9 Bullet 4, about the capacity, the time frame is that by the end of the calendar year, the internal capacity in terms of the staff that we need will have been put in place. And then to the extent that we roll out specific applications for different departments, that will depend on the project by project. But the internal capacity that we need in order to do the things we do is in fact going to be concluded by the end of the calendar year, by the end of December. By the time we go on holiday, we'll have all of the people in place and functioning. The other general question that came up was around the cost containment measures, the impact they have on CETA. We get orders from departments. Some departments have already indicated that their budgets on IT have come down, and therefore that will impact the demand for our services in some areas. We're working with various departments, especially the big ones, defense, SAPS and so on, to find ways in which we can optimize costs in certain areas so that their services in various initiatives are not impacted negatively. And obviously, as an organization, we're also putting our own cost containment measures to make sure that we also operate a lean and mean machine. I think those were the questions. The question around those driving the e-government, I think, was answered already. Thank you.
Thank you, Kuri. We usually make a follow-up of responses, but unfortunately, the daytime is against us. Some of us have a workshop at 32 today, meaning we're going to be here the whole weekend. However, I think we get those points in writing, you can get them maybe the next week Wednesday, so that the people can distribute to different members. And members also, it's an outstanding questions. I think we'll do so, that when the responses from our colleagues on Wednesday already, our questions have gone through. And we'd like to thank all the participants in this meeting today. And I'm also for the... Sorry?
Chairperson, I wrote a little note to you to say that at the conclusion, we must just a way forward for us with this whole very important project.
That was going to be the very last point, because there's only one issue here. that we're going to give to the department, but I think we need to make it clear that not that you are 100% satisfied with the questions. I mean, with the responses, we'd like to make a follow-up, but due to time constraints, I'm not going to do this. And, you know, it's not a good day at the end of the story. For us, it's not the end of the story. We're going to engage in future again. And I think Member Gillian, I'll give the opportunity to say what is in the notes here. But I wanted you to say it, because there's a little note that we wrote. I want to make sure that the orator of this one put it clearly that we need to have that in future, so that when we do oversight, we are sure that the department has committed itself to certain issues, and also issue for capacity, that if you make a promise to us to commit that you do certain such a thing, within a certain time frame, you actually do that. And also, I think it's only fair to thank the center for what they've done with issues. We were engaging with them in September, and we really have responses to the geographic location of the connectivity. So it makes it easier for us to go to those areas to oversight. Member Gillian, I think we'll try to... Yeah.
Yes. I think what we have come to understand today, and I really want to... I trust that on behalf of the majority of the members, we want to thank everybody who was here and for your participation, etc. But you will also just understand that this is a very important project for us as Parliament. And therefore, we would like to conclude by asking this partner, SA Connect, as a project and as an integrated project, could we please ask for an integrated project plan? Obviously not drilling down onto technical matters, but just, you know, the structures which will drive it, the roles of the different entities, who will be responsible for what, and then the timelines and the measurable goals. The concern that we have is we always have feedback individually from the different departments and entities. But what we now need to get is an integrated plan. So we really need an integrated project plan. And if we could ask the department who's running the driver of SA Connect, if you could compile such a plan, we're not calling for it in the next week or two, but Chairperson, we will have to have it next year. Thank you. If we could conclude with that, thank you.
Let us not go in pieces before I finish and it goes up. It's not a question, but maybe a request that in future when we meet with the department or entities, we are expecting them to deliver something. Not a question, because if we open up our question again, we're going to go on and on and on. Remember myself.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just wanted to reiterate the issue that Honorable Kim, I think Honorable McKean raised it, that on some of the issues that we are talking about, for instance, CETA, on the challenges, the broadband infra code upgrade priorities is still to be analyzed, that we need to have faith on that. And secondly, on the department, they've spoken of the second engagement, and that there's a multi-stakeholder steering committee and task team that has been established. I don't want them to answer now. They can write or if provinces are representing that structure, because it will be there. It will be better coordinated if there's also representation. And lastly, the FASA said they've got representation in every province, and it's one in five provinces, and it's one representative in that. So will that be enough, or it's enough capacity to be able to find that? So I don't have to answer today, but those are the questions that I have. Thank you.
Thank you very much, members and colleagues. We have a project that is with. I'm just thinking of time now, getting control of young person here, I'm getting at them next year, but we still have to adopt our minutes, correct them, and do yourself, and do correct if you don't have any outstanding for the next meeting. Can I go to Nina? As the minute of the 1st of October, we do corrections. Then adopt the corrections. If we can try to live quietly, we know that we are rushing for flights, but I think we also have to do our part accordingly. And thanks again, enjoy your weekend. Those who want to stay, and say good and good. Can you remember to get the hand up for the minute?
Okay, person, I don't know if you want to work page by page. I just noted a little omission on page 5.
Yeah, I think it's better to go page by page. You don't do page 4, you can't look at page 1, page whatever. You go page by page. Thank you. In that order. Let's start page 1. Page 2. Page 3. Nothing. Page 4. Page 5.
It's just under the heading of living by sensing. We just have there in the second paragraph, we have Dr. Satumo, but it should be Dr. Mohafi. Dr. Satumo Mohafi. If we can just work on the surname rather than the first name. That was my only correction. Okay. And then there's just one tiny thing on page 7.
Okay. Page 6.
Chairperson, right at the bottom. We refer to the Auditor General report. I think what we should really stipulate there is on the financials, it was unqualified. But I cannot recall that if there were matters of emphasis. I can't now recall that. But I think it's important to just say on financial statements if they were unqualified, and if they were, and if any member could remember, if there were matters of emphasis, as far as Ikamba is concerned, I can't remember right now, Chair. I was actually not in that period, in that meeting.
Do you have a correct reading? If you don't remember.
No, what I'm just saying is the report of the Auditor General on the financial statement indicated that the entity received an unqualified audit outcome. The only thing that our secretary should check is if there were matters of emphasis. Please, if she can check that. And then on page 7, if you will allow me, if you look in the middle of the page, the following issues were highlighted in the respect of the presentation. That's just at the bottom. There's just a little typo. There's a gap there. SMME support and poor service delivery. If she can just... Yeah. Thank you, Jess. That is the only thing. Thank you.
Is that all, members? Page 8, the last one. Yeah. Can you move for adoption with correction? Member Gillen, seconded by Member Dongren. This one. 7th November. Let's start from page 1.
Chairperson, sorry, can I just ask that we make a note, ask the Secretary to make a note on the minutes of the 21st of October. We will have to follow up on the outstanding SAPU annual report. We will have to, and I think that is probably what Honourable McKenzie wanted to engage the Minister on. So,
noted.
Okay, but I said maybe... But I will not second guessing, then I would have wanted to ask the minister about that matter. That's fine, thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Minister. Doctors, can come to the second set of minutes, that is for 7 November. Page 1. Page 2. Page 3.
Okay, thank you. And page 3, the spelling was Mr. McKenzie, as I on adoption of the minutes.
the second paragraph, Mr. McKenzie, you can add.
Mr. McKenzie?
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Honourable Ms. Hagrid, for being so attentive to spelling of my name. If I can just shed a little light on the MC or the MAC, if your ancestors are from Scotland, it's MAC. If your ancestors are from Ireland, it's MC. And it's the difference between being Bosa or Isisulu. So it's MAC. Thank you. Z-I-E.
Thank you. Thank you. And the next page?
Can I just ask, there is no indication of any apology submitted. I was not in attendance and I submitted an apology. Thank you, Chief.
That is noted. Okay. Page 5? Page 6? Nothing? Can you move forward, okay? Those who are present? Can I again be saying this, sorry?
So, Chair, just back to page 6. The following issues were highlighted in respect of the presentation. Further, the first bullet point. Further conversation between the department and ICASA was needed in terms of realignment of policy directives. I have no idea what that means. I think what we were trying to say was there were certain policy directives that were holding up, as far as I remember in the report that they gave the players, the various cell phone companies, they said there were certain studies or directives that ICASA was supposed to complete and they were delayed that were holding up the progress. So I'm not sure what realignment means there. Can we just say perhaps we're needed in terms of policy directives and take out realignment of?
Thank you. With the correction, can you just remove and support them? You know, please remove, support it by the member Donyeni. Thank you, ma'am. Thank you very much, remember?
Chair, just on the matters arising, Honourable Gillian. The last meeting I did raise the issue of the South African Post Office with the chairperson, Kobai, who said she would write to the committee to give us an update. Well, I never received an email. Additionally, Chairperson, I did ask if we could have a weekly update on progress with relation to any developments or progress within the South African Host Office. That hasn't happened, and I would ask that be tabled as a permanent agenda item. It's absolutely critical. We sit here at the Telecommunications Committee. The Post Office forms the backbone of the online economy. We get the only information I get as a Member of Parliament and as a member of this committee is what I read in the media.
As an understandable motion, which will be noted and forwarded to her, as
thank
you, Chair. As they requested. Member Chair?
Thank you, Chair. As I will not be seeing members of this committee before the Christmas holidays, I'll be away next week and won't be on the oversight trip. I'd just like to wish you all the best for the festive season and be safe, have a good time, and come back refreshed.
Quite a positive note. Thank you very much. Thank you. It's really enjoyed the holidays. Thank you.